Proserpina, Proserpina, come home to mama, come home to mama, Proserpina.
Oh, we're under male voice.
Oh, I wonder if this is going to make it sound... Nice. Okay, do you think it's going to make it sound like we're talking like helium, or we're talking like Tom Waits?
I don't think anything will happen. I don't think that means anything. I don't know why it's there.
So why don't we discuss the gender dynamics of GarageBand?
Yeah, what's up with it?
Stupid.
That's a good question, Kara.
Thanks.
However, it's for another day. Instead, today, welcome to a podcast of one's own. I didn't introduce us on the last episode.
Oh. No one will know who we are.
Like, that's fine. It's just a wall of voices anyway.
Yeah.
I'm here today with Skye.
Hello.
And Kara.
Hello.
You laughed at yourself. And, hello. Ha. That's your new sign on. Hello.
Ha.
I really like it. Okay, so I'm here with Skye.
Hello.
What are we doing again?
Ha.
To introduce her properly.
Oh, did you want me to do it normally?
No.
Hi.
Oh, I like feel way better. With Kara.
Hello.
And I'm Kate. And today we're going to be talking exclusively, I think, because that's Kara's. Hello. Ha. This is Kara. Hi. Ha, 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 ha.
I'm just saying, I doubt we're going to exclusively talk about it. We're going to spoil something.
We're going to spoil most things. I think that can be just generally stated. We're going to spoil most things. We're going to talk about Homeland a bit. Probably quite a bit. But I assume anything that we've, like, had on our minds lately will also come up. Anyone I've been thinking is handsome. Because I haven't I haven't watched Homeland. I've watched maybe 3 episodes of this season. Obviously, I watched all of season 1. I'm way behind on this. I don't care about it, and I'm not going to watch it. So you guys should spoil away.
So to preface this webisode, general apathy.
Webisode?
And by webisode, I mean...
Where did webisode
come from? You know exactly what we're doing right now.
It's called a podcast of one's own. It's not called a woo.
A woo is a way better
than a poo.
But, okay, to go to Homeland, I mean, I was...
We had a famous question of the week.
No! I just want to talk about Homeland.
You're ruining the episode.
We've done nothing for 2.5 minutes.
Welcome back.
Hello!
We should probably just start again.
No. No. We can fade in from somewhere.
Okay. This. Introduce us again.
Welcome to a podcast of One Sound. Welcome back, loyal listeners, I assume. If you're meeting us for the first time, I'm here today with Skye.
Hi.
And Sarah.
Hello! Ha!
I think we should keep it all.
I guess we have to. And so, what's our feminist question of the week?
And so, this week, to lead into Homeland, like, as you just heard me talking about, I don't care about Homeland and I'm not going to watch it anymore, but I think that to a certain degree, shows that have female protagonists or have female creators, like The Weeds or Grey's Anatomy, are examples, or... We'll talk about Grey's Anatomy, don't worry. Exclusively Homeland! And, but shows that in some way have, if not necessarily a positive female representation or uncomplicated female representation, have female representation, or include something about gender representation that is important or significant. What is our obligation as feminists to keep watching something of that nature or to keep consuming female-powered art even after it stops being good?
I mean, I think, really, there is no obligation, really. But I feel so much of it.
Yes.
And I don't feel bad about it. I mean, I enjoy watching these things that are mostly written or directed by women rather than, like, starring women.
Yeah.
But I don't feel bad about it. I mean, I even watched a few episodes of Two Broke Girls to see if it was any good. It wasn't. And then New Girl, and then I continued watching New Girl, even though both of these shows, if they weren't written by women, I probably wouldn't have watched them.
You also stuck with Weeds, didn't you?
I stuck with Weeds.
I knew one of you stuck with Weeds.
I watched it until the 5th season or something.
But that's, for me, it had nothing to do with, I actually hate Jenji Cohen, who wrote Weeds, and I would prefer,
But you like Mary Louise Parker.
That's why I watched. I
who
would
is
love
still
Mary Louise Parker.
Amazing.
A woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
She's
point.
Really amazing in it. So I feel, you know, and I definitely feel like I will seek out and try to support and pay money for things that are either, like, books written with a feminist spin or, like, art shows or anything that is, I definitely feel it. And I think that there is some obligation in that, like, if you want these things to be good and more prominent, you should support them in some sort of way.
Yeah, like, contributing to the economy of feminist product is going to perpetuate feminist product, obviously.
But, of course, if that isn't your goal, if you don't care about that, then obviously you have no obligation. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of feminists who don't care about that, especially in pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, of all the things that I'm like, oh, I'm going to go help out feminist content.
And then and
I'm
by
like,
watching
New Girl.
You're like, I can make this happen. And then all of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Just all of
Grey's
Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy is really amazing. And I would like to have a separate episode just about Grey's Anatomy and how good it is. And that's all.
We'll do that. And I haven't watched Grey's Anatomy since season two.
But
maybe,
you'll know. I'll read the TV page.
I honestly, I don't, I guess, maybe I just don't have much to say, but I really feel, like, the only times I feel obligation to watch is for shows like Girls, where it's, like, about, purporting to be about women, written by a woman for women, but, like, when it's just, like, a female writer, this is also a big difference, potentially,
Girls...
because you guys work in film, or, like,
you know. Kate works really hard.
I do a lot of work in film.
You know what I mean.
Sometimes she sells
jeans
to Sarah Polley,
like,
so it's kind of, like,
sometimes I also sell jeans to other people. Oh my god, okay, so do you know the show? What's it called? EverQuest? It's not called that.
No, it's not called EverQuest.
Everwood,
yeah.
Protagonist of that, sold him some pants, didn't know who he was.
Oh my god, he's in the protagonist?
He's in Rookie Blue.
I love Rookie Blue.
Okay, sold him some pants,
and
didn't know who he was. So asked his name, because my manager's like, he's famous, find out his name. So I was like, can I put you into my system? Did that, and his name's Gregory Smith. Misheard him.
Yeah, it is.
He's in our system as Gregor Smythe.
Gregor. Anyone's name is Gregor anymore.
I know. He took off his shirt a lot, because he was chaining in the middle, because they always do.
Right.
All of them.
All those
ripped.
Celebrities.
Ripped.
Really, that's surprising, because he kind of plays, like, dweeby.
He's totally, like, he's skinny, but he's got build underneath. I sold him a $400
cashmere
sweater.
I think he's really attractive, and I also really like Rookie Blue. Moving on back to Kate Sky's point.
I was just gonna say, I just don't feel that obligation.
But then why did you stick with Weeds?
Because I love Mary Louise Parker, and I think
so
she
that
does
is that obligation.
Be
no, because
bit.
That's not
a feminist
thing.
She's
just
not a
really
writer,
good
she's
at
just
it.
An actor, and I just think that she's beautiful to watch. And then the other thing was, like, I had come so far with Weeds that I was like, I'm carrying this bitch to term.
I loved that.
Nope.
Loved it.
Did not.
Loved everything about carrying this bitch to term.
I've heard that joke, like, three times from you about this show.
I think...
Thank you.
Okay. For me, I wonder if it's a little bit, like, if it is, I mean, gendered or whatever, if it is because of this. Like, for me, it's not. I give up on shows all the time and for all kinds of reasons, and I haven't stuck with a show after it pissed me off ever.
Yeah, I don't think I'm more likely to stick with a show that I think is bad, even if it's by women, but I'm more likely to seek it out and give it a try. Yeah.
Like, okay, when we were tossing around ideas for a previous podcast... Sky, you and I sort of, like, had a visceral reaction of distaste to Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, fuck her.
Which makes me feel guilty a little bit, because she seems like a tough broad.
Whatever.
And I feel like I should like her, but I think her movies are mediocre.
I've only seen one.
The Hurt Locker?
It was
mediocre.
Other movies has she done?
She's making 30 Dark Zero now.
I know, and I think that looks
Zero
really
Dark
good.
30.
And I'm actually, I look forward to seeing Zero Dark 30.
The trailer's very good.
The trailer is very good, and I think it will be good, and I think that it will be better... than The Hurt Locker, because The Hurt Locker was very cliche and very, like, normal. Like, you've seen that story a million times.
She did Point Break. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I hear amazing things.
I've heard middling things. I mean, Grey Groups likes it.
Right.
So probably it's the best.
But I don't know why you guys both hate her, but I think that hate on is something to do with really successful women.
No.
I think that actually it's kind of the opposite of that. Like, I think that she's receiving praise.
Yeah.
Because of her gender, as opposed to the quality of her work, and I'd rather she made better work than people be like, it's so amazing that a woman made this movie. Like, it's not. Make a better movie.
Again, so I'm saying this having seen none of her films. I hate her for no reason.
Oh my god! Different reason, that's so valid. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
And this guy's like, I don't like how much money she has.
Yeah, no, but what I was going to say...
skinny blonde bitch she is.
She has so much power. So,
I don't know if she looks like, but I've read Cameron. I knew that though.
She's pretty good looking.
Yeah, she is very pretty.
So I haven't seen her work. I've like read the synopsis for the Hurt Locker, and I've. But I feel that
I can't wait.
No, like, I'm gonna tell you what I don't like about her movies.
Let me tell you right now. I have read the synopsis for the Hurt Locker.
But like the thing is,
I have things to say.
I do. I don't. I find the idea of that and this upcoming movie kind of in tandem, just sort of unpalatable because it just feels so overly patriotic that I don't want to see it.
You
don't want to see it. I don't want to see it.
You know what? I actually
don't know if it's overly patriotic.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it's overly patriotic at all.
I think it's about America, but I don't think it's Americana.
I think a lot of it is super anti-war. Like, at least the Hurt Locker is quite anti-war, and it's, like, even in the cliche of, like, soldiers get PTSD and have trouble readjusting to normal life. Like, in that sort of way, anti-war. But this one seems to be very anti the politics that went behind.
This one seems political. Okay, so...
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I want to take what you're saying, though, and segue it into something, though.
Of why do you hate Kathryn Bigelow so much? I think if it was a different director, why wouldn't hate them so much for making something that's so patriotic? But when you come to Kathryn Bigelow, you're like, ugh.
That's totally the sounds you make.
I guess, I don't know. I think that well, obviously, like, it's totally, like, just judgments. But, like, I think that she's received, like, a lot of celebrity status from that movie. So I think that it's true that, like, if it's just some other random director who makes, like, random films and you don't know a lot about them, you're not going to have a reaction to them.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of, like, I just, again, hate, like, the idea of a series of work that's about, like, American politics and war.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it just seems so annoying.
I
didn't really have that reaction until I found out that she's also making this movie. And then that, in combination with the Hurt Locker, made me, like, really not, like, love the idea of her body of work.
I actually think it makes me like the Hurt Locker more, because I wasn't a fan of the Hurt Locker when I saw it, and I'm still not. But, like, the idea that, you know, this woman is going to, like, make provocative anti-war, some interesting American politic thing, and that be her thing, and she's going to get very popular for it. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing, and I hope
if she actually does it. Yeah.
And I hope this movie does really well and is good, obviously. But I hope it does really well because, like, you don't want her to just be like, she made the Hurt Locker, she won an award, and now she is only making shitty movies, because then it's going to be like, yeah, a woman doesn't win Best Director award for another 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was really, like, operating under the assumption from, like, what other people have told me that, like, the Hurt Locker is, like, super patriotic.
I don't think it was particularly.
It's not.
Well, in that case, that's okay, I guess. But I still don't, like, love the idea of this series of work.
I have to say about sort of what we're talking about, though, I do it a lot less, like, I kind of have that drive with, like, Canadian things a bit.
Good point.
Not as much. Like, I not Canadian television, but... Like, so,
I did watch all of Lost Girl.
And isn't Rookie Blue Canadian?
And Rookie Blue, yeah. Rookie Blue is also set in Toronto.
With my friend Gregor.
Lost Girl is ups and downs. Ups and downs.
But I think that I feel more loyalty to, like, Gregor's mic.
I just heard your joke.
Joke? But I have a lot of loyalty to, like, Canadian things. Yeah. I find that comes a lot
That's
more.
True. I have, yeah. I mean, I have the, you know, I want... women to do well, and I want Canadian things to do well. I think I can rep a little bit more pride because, like, just a woman doing well feels a lot less close to me than, like, a Canadian doing well. Because, mm-hmm. you know, as Canadians, we all have the, like, they're Canadian.
Yeah,
but we have to point out every single Canadian.
That's a woman, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we should start. except for, we kind of do, I think. Like,
one of the writers.
Yeah, or, like, Tarantino's editor, or, like, Scorsese's editor, all the editors always.
Tarantino's editor is not a woman.
I thought it was.
Not on.
Oh, okay. Me previously. Movie. But in general, when someone's, like, when a lady's behind the scenes in a surprising role,
yeah.
I tend to say something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
In film. But that's because you're aware of sort of the sex division in the film industry. And I don't think people who come from outside of it are aware of that to the same extent.
Same with non-Canadians.
Yeah.
I'm usually not aware of who's Canadian.
Then we are. Yeah.
We really always know, like, every Canadian, it's like a rite of passage for all Canadians, have, like, an inventory of their mind.
And to anyone point who's done out, anything significant. Like, Ryan Gosling comes up in a conversation, if you're in the States, you have to be like, you know he's from Canada.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But not Jim Carrey, because he's a traitor.
Yeah.
Well, most of the Canadians that we talk about as being Canadian are usually traitors.
But no, like, he got, like, he renounced his citizenship.
Yeah, but they always almost have passports, dual moving into singular. Passport. Anyway.
We should make that a separate website. That's my new passion project. CanadianTraders.com.
And look how passionate we get calling them traitors.
That'd be a really good podcast. It's like, who's betrayed Canada lately?
Okay, so anyway, I hope Catherine Bigelow does really well, and I look forward to seeing her next movie. And I definitely even feel more obligated to watch something, but not obligated. I don't think obligated is the right word, because that means, like, maybe it has, like, the connotation of me not wanting
but
I'll definitely go and be happier about looking at other women's bodies of work.
Yeah, you will. yeah, fair enough. So, speaking of, like, and how I kind of got on this was I stopped watching Homeland because I started thinking that the writing was bad. Why did you guys stick with it, and what are your thoughts on season two, and especially the season two finale?
I think that season two is less good than season one. I'm not prepared to say that the writing's bad.
I am. I'm prepared.
I am ready.
The writing got very bad, and, like, everything that was interesting about season one was
ambiguity,
pretty much, like,
any ambiguity ever about anything.
Any ambiguity, and also, like, Carrie as a character has become a lot less interesting because she doesn't add very much to the show in season two.
Is it now the Brody show?
It's now a lot to do with Brody, and she's not very agentic, and, like, not a lot of the plot has anything to do with her, and her mental illness is thrown out the window, like, pretty early on.
Did they cure it? That's so neat.
They stabilized it. Yeah, she's fine.
Was it the electroconvulsive therapy?
I guess.
Quick fix.
I don't know. Yeah, probably.
But hopefully it'll come back, but it was just, like, not interesting, but the reason why I stuck with it so much is because, like, I wasn't ever up to date, but everyone was like, yo, the Homeland finale is crazy. Like, the whole internet was like, that was a crazy finale.
That's true. And I do.
And so
I was
like, okay, I'm going to get to the finale. And every week it was kind of a struggle to get through, but you kind of have, because we just watched Homeland the first season. Yeah, but so, damn it, Kate.
Sorry. Obligated here, no, like, struggling through. Yeah. It was so interesting, you're getting to the finale.
Because we watched season one of Homeland so close to the season two, mm-hmm. in fact, while it was still on, that it's like, you kind of remember how good it was in season one. Mm-hmm. And you're like, maybe something will happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. And Carrie is just a boring character who's in love with Brody, who just wants to run away with him, and, like,
that's dumb.
It's so boring.
What happens in the finale?
Characters other than, and she has no characteristics anymore.
So what happens in the last episode? Was it actually?
Do you have any response to? Was actually Carrie has no characteristics.
Carrie characteristics.
Do we get carried away?
That's a tagline.
I also made a Carrie pun.
It was much better.
I heard yours
moments ago.
Characteristics. Okay. That's why I wanted to make one too, but I could only think of the Sex and the City one. I don't know, like, I agree that some of the major losses across seasons are, like, ambiguity for sure, and sort of Carrie's, basically, like, identity. I think that's true. I don't think that she has no characteristics or no agency anymore. Like, I think that there's still something to her, but it's a lot less. Like, she has significantly been attenuated.
I'm definitely excited.
But, you know, if you were comparing her to sort of other main female characters on television right now, I think she's still probably stronger.
She's
been Leslie Knope.
Well, no. Nobody's stronger than Leslie Knope.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely points where she'll, you know, go run after the helicopter and, like, you know, do whatever she feels is right. But I just mean, in comparison, it feels like she's not driving the plot.
Yeah,
is what I mean
not,
by
yeah.
agency. Not, like, her own personal thing. But she has no, she doesn't matter to the plot,
Terrorists become the center of the plot. Like, terrorists, like, sort of, it switches, like, I think season one, obviously there's this, like, big, huge political backdrop to it, but, like, season one's really about, like, I think these individual people. Like, I think it's much more individual level than, like, broad macro kind of style.
Yeah.
And then it switches, and it becomes a lot more about, like, big political movements and power plays by terrorists versus the CIA and the government, and Carrie as a representative of one of those sides than an individual sort of psychological study, which is obviously much less interesting to most of us, but I think is probably still very appealing to sort of mass audiences.
But I think it's more appealing to, like, the twist sort of,
exactly.
Like, genre
well,
show.
Well, exactly.
Which is
it becomes more about plot than character.
Yeah, yeah. But what happens at the end, do you want to know?
Yeah.
Spoilers,
I mean, right
for
now.
Homeland.
Yeah, of course. Is that, what's his name? The terrorist, the main terrorist?
Abu Nazir.
Abu Nazir, they find him and they kill him.
Oh.
But before they do so, he gets the code to the vice president's pacemaker and turns it off, so the vice president dies via his pacemaker not working. And then,
can you remotely turn off pacemakers? Because that seems like a bad feature.
Yeah.
Pacemaker, looking at you, if that's a real quality.
And then after he dies, they have they blow up. Terrorists still blow up the CIA.
They blow up the. They have a funeral at the CIA for the vice president, and like all of the major people are there except for like Brody and Carrie, like escape to go make out basically. And while they escape,
they're hooking up now.
The CIA.
They were in love the whole season, pretty much.
Yeah,
with each other.
Yeah,
he's into her now.
Yeah,
this show sounds bad.
It was kind of unclear for like a few episodes if it was a sincere thing on both their ends, but then by the end you're like, yeah, for sure.
Yes.
But
Saul, of course, did not die. Thank God. Because Saul is literally the only good thing about the show.
Saul is so good at acting, and his beard is so majestic.
And the best thing, the best moment of the whole season was when they were over, they were listening to Carrie have sex with Brody, and everyone was like, oh, God. And then you just see Saul put his head down in his hands, and it was really funny. I love Saul.
Yeah.
He's I
laughed
out loud.
And actually, that is one good thing. So, like, Saul thinks Carrie is dead in this wreckage. So, wait, everybody pins it on Brody because they have that video from season one of him, like, saying. So
but
they
also,
it
was from his car.
Yeah, and the bomb was in his car. And then, so, Carrie helps him escape and then comes back, and Saul thinks that she's dead and is really fucking bummed. And then turns around and sees Carrie, and it's actually sweet. His face is really
sweet. It's sweet, but it's also sad because you have an impression that Saul knows where Carrie was and what Carrie was doing, which was helping Brody escape.
Yeah.
So that was interesting, but I mean, most of the Saul-Carrie relationship, which is, like, one of the most interesting ones, is not foregrounded in this season, either. They're apart for so much of it, and it makes it a lot less interesting.
Yeah, they have a great relationship when they show it.
I'm wondering, because on a personal level, a character level, I find Carrie and Brody being in love and hooking up, like, so, like, boring, and it sounds trite, but on, if we accept, like, there was some allegorical qualities to the first season, I'm wondering if those are continuing, like, I'm wondering,
no. What allegorical qualities?
Where, like, Carrie was kind of this, like, fractured and paranoid American public, and Brody kind of was some sort of, like, America interest that was also split, and I think they were both, like, embodying complicated parts of America, and then them having some sort of connection with each other, I think, was just complicating that further. I think it was interesting.
Even if you take it from, like, a less symbolic way of reading it, like, their relationship is less, like, these two somewhat damaged people, as much as that sounds really stupid, damaged people, but you know what I mean by that, are into each other because they're the only people they have around them that they can relate to.
Yeah.
This season, it makes it seem more that they are soulmates. That they are, you know, they are destined to be with each other and their love is greater than anything else. Rather than they just kind of happened into it and, like, surprisingly, they may have complicated relationships.
And they have, like,
and
a complicated...
It's just love.
They have, like, yeah, the complications of their connection... Well, again, it's ambiguities, right? Like, the idea that things weren't... Okay. So I'm not going to watch it.
That's cool. Good. Should we just wrap it up?
Yeah, well, that's our Homeland update.
I guess one more thing just to, like, it's not that interesting, but just to say it's that, like, The reason I'm going to keep watching Homeland is the same reason that I kept watching Weeds, which is that I love that act. Like, I love Mary Louise Parker. I love her acting, like, what she does with the character. And I really like Claire Danes, and I like her acting. And I like what she does with the character. And I think she's great to watch. And she's, even though they fuck up her character, she's still really good to watch.
Yeah, she is very good in it. I don't know. I say, like, I look forward to seeing what they're going to do with the next season, because maybe it'll be really good.
And this is, like, what we're saying is not new either. Like, it's a widely held criticism, I think, that has been made of this season a lot on the old interwebs. So if the Homeland writers are, like, watching and listening, they will pick up on it, and then they should hopefully make adjustments.
Maybe. I find, just in general, really hooky season finales, like cliffhanger ones, tend to not lead to very interesting season premieres. And I kind of always get wary when you have a season finale that leaves things unresolved in such dramatic ways, because it seems a little bit like, I don't know, it seems like, or like end of episode twists do it for me too. Like, there's that, when you establish that rhythm, you have to maintain that rhythm, and that's always escalation, and it's always escalation to places that are less character and less logic based.
Usually what they do is they have this like crazy finale, and then the next season they have a very mundane opening of like, you just get little tidbits of what's happening, and it's like super on a different pace, and that's kind of, that is kind of boring. But I don't think that it was cliffhangery. Like, it could, the season series could end there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It could feel like it could be wrapped up as a whole. Yeah. It doesn't feel as good as the first season wrap-up, because I think that was a really more interesting arc.
That was a good one,
But, like, the things that could happen, it could see, like, retribution and, like, well, all of these things and kind of come to a close, and Brody escapes, and, you know, there are so many endings to things. But I think that they have so much room to do such amazing things with Brody being away. You know what I mean? They can just leave Brody until you need him later, when he's actually going to be, like, valuable at all. You can just leave him in the forest in Canada.
Send him to Canada.
Yeah, he goes to Newfoundland, which is in Canada, you know.
Did you know? Are there Canadians in Homeland? I can't think of any.
No. I don't think. But I think one more thing, just, I want to, sort of.
No, that's okay. Your point's probably more interesting.
Well, I was just going to say one more thing about the season, not to justify the sort of, like, mediocreness of season two, but I'm hopeful that it's going to get better. And I think part of it is that, like, just in terms of stability, like, season one was really unstable, like, in a good way, but, like, her character was really, like, very fragmented, like, going in a lot of different directions. It was a really, like, rapid and radical time of change for that character, and I think she is really, like, she's really leveling out in season two, which is much less interesting and really, like, not great to watch, but I think that'll give some room to, like, I think that basically, like, perhaps, like, her character continuing at the pace that she was at in season one was, like, unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And I think that this sort of boring shit season will give her some room to kind of go back to being a more interesting character with more ambiguity, or, like, that's just less flat, like, maybe in season three, because she's had this sort of stasis.
You know, I think the leveling out, like, I disagree, the leveling out could be really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how often do they other people still invalidate her, even though she's supposedly leveled out? What are the adjustments? How does she feel differently? Like, what is different about her? But they don't address anything. They don't address her character. She's just kind of, like, left, and we just assume that she's leveled out. And it's like, you just don't go into it. So I don't think it's, like, something like being manic is more entertaining, even though maybe it is. I think that there's just as much you could do with, like, the leveling out. That's just as interesting if it's done in a well-written way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that really fucked it up this season is that, like, a big part that I love that was in the early parts of season two was, like, when she was sort of saying that, like, being wrong, when she thought she was wrong about Brody, like, wanting to, like, walking into that bunker with a suicide vest, which she wasn't wrong about. We knew that she wasn't wrong, but she thought she was wrong, so did everyone else. When she would talk about sort of how, like, being wrong really fucked her up, and how she, like, didn't know anymore, like, which of her thoughts she could trust, mm-hmm. which of her thoughts were true, were accurate, were right for her. That was the early part of season two, and that was really wicked, in my opinion. Like, I think to see, like, it was such a gendered experience anyway, but to see, like, this woman character who's been so invalidated and is so good at her job, to feel like she cannot figure out which of her feelings are true, quote unquote, like, real, valid, whatever, and thoughts, and which of her thoughts are sort of false or wrong and, like, cannot disentangle that mess. And I would have liked, but then she finds out she's right, so it resolves that conflict, which is actually really unfortunate in a lot of ways, because I would have loved, I loved that that was happening, and I would have loved to see that character really, like, negotiate that for, like, an entire season, because I think that that is such an important gendered experience.
And there's so much, like, there's so much that it could have been, like, it seems like it's gonna go in that direction, but suddenly, just, like, Peter Quinn believes everything she says.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, but why? No, like,
yeah.
He just, you know, threatens
maybe
to kill.
Maybe he woke up that day in that mood.
No. A lot of days. But, like, he threatens to kill the head of the CIA because he, like, believes in Carrie so much. Like, Carrie is the best analyst. And you're like, what? Like, why?
Yeah, and also, like, why do these people think she's such a good fucking analyst if she's, like, bailing on all of them and, like, you know, sleeping with more, like,
but
what is their
that's
whole
not about analysis.
And,
but like, I think but that like, she's always right, and I think one of the problems even with season one is that she's never wrong.
Yeah.
Even though, even in season one when people were dismissing her and that was more interesting, she's literally never wrong.
Yeah.
Everything she says is right, and so therefore she's a good analyst. Like, yeah. I mean, like, if she was doing, guessing, you know, the future wrong, then maybe we could be like, yeah, she shouldn't be promoted, but, like...
No, she's doing her job well.
Yeah, you know, she's just, like, doing everything right, even if it's not doing her job well.
She doesn't do her job well. Like, I think that... But
you
I think that
sleep
that's...
with, like, someone who might have bombed people, but, like...
But beyond that, like, also, like...
She didn't catch Abu Nazir, and no one else did.
No, I'm not saying that she's not a great analyst. Like, she's a good analyst, but I guess what I'm saying is that, like, I'm tired of that kind of archetype of, like... You know, I mean, it's got an interesting gender twist to it because people invalidate her and don't believe her, but that person of, like, who's brilliant but reckless, you know? And it's like,
and
everybody's like, she's so good at her job, she's amazing.
She's
but
a live
like,
wire.
Recklessness actually, and, like, you know, has costed them a lot.
But that was what's interesting in season one. We talked about this on the previous podcast about how interesting it was with her as opposed to how they did it with the male characters because it was more invalidated.
Yeah,
but in
totally.
This season, it was, like, everyone invalidating her except for, like, Peter Quinn, who was like, you know, she's probably right. Like, it was just, like, not interestingly done.
Yeah, and I think it would, I agree that, I think we just were on the same page and that, like, I agree that it would be nice if she was wrong more and had more cause to, like, go through that experience of questioning herself, and I think that was, like, they had it, like, in the bag, they were doing it, and then they fucked it up.
Yeah.
Do you think them making her not ever wrong is them trying to make her a, quote, stronger female character?
Yes. Certainly, and it's stupid.
Okay, that's interesting. it's so, like, at what point, what do you think changed that they're complicated female character? Do you think it was, like, viewership, and they realized they had to make this character, or they didn't realize what people were appreciating about the character? Like, not that, of course, it matters what they thought or what they were doing, but it's a major shift.
Well, I think that in their mind, sort of, like, you know, it's, like, we're set up to root for her, obviously. We root for the protagonist, and we see her get fucked over a lot, and so I think that it was suspected by writers that, like, you know, seeing her get sort of what she deserves, knowing that she's correct and right about this thing that's been really damaging for her after all these things that happened at the end of season two and how fucked over she was and lost her job, would be satisfying for the audience and would be gratifying to see her feel relief and know that she was right. And there is that. Like, I did feel that. Like, when I watched it, I was like, oh, good, she's not going to be sad anymore. But then I also realized that, like, we were going to lose this really, really interesting plot point.
But also, you know, a rounded character.
Yeah, and also, like, just, yeah, exactly, just, like, that complication, and I think that there is this belief that to make a strong female character who's occupying a role that's not typical of women, like, this intelligence, really, you know, successful or really good intelligence agent, we need to, this idea that, like, she can't be shown being vulnerable or fallible in a way or making mistakes, but that's a commonly held belief about how to make a female character, and it's
so common.
Yeah, and
yeah,
it's not really effective.
Yeah, that's big on the internet, but... what I was going to say about one of your points was that what was really interesting at the end of the season, when they catch Abu Nazir, like, she isn't happy. Like, she was right, and everything worked out well, and you, as you said, you want to be happy for her, because, like, she's not going to be sad anymore, but you could see, like, the weird, complicated, bittersweetness that she had upon seeing Abu Nazir's dead body. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it feels like I'm not going to go into say what she was thinking, because I think it was, she had such great acting that I couldn't just say one thing. Mm-hmm. It was very complicated, but, like, there is some sort of, like, end of an era. Like, did she really just get him? Did that,
but there's,
you
know,
did all of these things happen? Did she really just accomplish this? How come she doesn't feel better? Mm-hmm. Like, how come all of her being rightness isn't making her feel better? And I think that's really interesting, and that kind of undermines one of our complaints about the show, is, like, she's always right.
But again,
like, what happens when she's always right?
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's a really, really good point, and I wish that that would have been fleshed out more as well. Like, not just to complain about the show, because I think that's true, and they definitely made a decision, because it's not clear what she's feeling, but it's clear that she's not just happy, and it's clear that she's not just relieved.
I think it will be next season, because they next season have to decide what to do, who's going to be the bad guy,
right,
what
but
the
like,
show structure going to be.
Yeah, but I think the other thing is, like, you could interpret that expression of that feeling of sort of, like, potentially partially being resolved by the fact that it wasn't over when he died, you know, and, like, her feeling, like, happy and then being like, but is it really over kind of thing? And then it's like, and I know it's not a direct link, but then it wasn't over. There was this whole other thing. So maybe then, once again, that emotions are connecting to that, like, suspicion that there's more to it than just his death. And that's really, again, resolving that, when maybe we should have left it more open and left her feeling of dissatisfaction to be more prolonged and not really interrupted by the event of, like, blowing up the CIA.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. That's a good point.
Assassinating the vice president seems like an unambitious plan. Like, would that change anything on a day-to-day basis? Like, the VP being assassinated? Like, it'd be, like, it's massively, like, it has its implications, but why the vice president and not the president?
Because
they don't want to show the president. Because
no.
Walden's a dick.
No, but they gave all that history of it. Walden was the in charge of the CIA, and he ordered the bombs over.
That killed
and
person.
And they lied about it. And so they were going specifically after the CIA, but also after Walden.
So. No, I don't remember that happening, though.
Yeah.
Season one.
I don't remember it. I don't care about the show anymore. I'm filtering out of my mind.
You know, one thing that I did kind of like about season two, sometimes and not always... Well, I still really think, okay, I guess a couple of things. Like, I still really think that the relationship that was existing in season two between Brody and his wife was kind of weird and okay.
Is the wife still around in season two?
Yeah.
She's around, but by the end, it's clear that they're, like, getting a divorce.
Is she hooking up with that other guy again?
Once or twice.
Yeah. Every now and again. But, like, sort of, again, like, just kind of continuing to flesh out that role of, like, sort of trying to play the wife and feeling weird about it and feeling like this was a role that was... Which, by the way, we haven't talked about this, but this is a really, I think, could be a really interesting kind of gender commentary that, like, this role of Brody's wife was carved out for her before she got a chance to grow into a wife of her own, basically. But, like, basically,
it's
that
actually
was
a wall.
Yeah. I carved out for her, and she doesn't know how to fit into it. Like, she doesn't know how to be that person because it doesn't fit with her because she didn't see this person for 10 years, and she's trying to occupy this space, and it's fucking weird for her. Like, and we see that in season one, like, almost right away, but you see that in season two, too, and I like that they continue it because...
I'd like to
just
see
in the
more
basis
of, that,
of, like,
then.
Performativity and, like, how to fit into that. Well, you're not, because they're getting divorced. So.
Yeah.
But just on the basis of, like, her sort of feeling this obligation and trying to kind of fit her emotions with it and it being sort of just, and not that she's necessarily not wanting to be his wife, but that it's just strange and she's just not sure. It was really nicely done in that way.
And they touched on that quite a bit with the whole daughter hits a person with a car, and then, like, the vice president's family was like, don't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, what? We have to tell people. And that was kind of the end of their friendship, because she obviously can't fit into that high-class politician's wife role.
Yeah.
And she kind of, like, made her decision not to. Though the role as wife, other than just the high-class wife. She made her decision not to, at the end, too.
Yeah, at the end, that's why I'm saying, like, they ruined it. Like, it was cool, and now they ruined
it. I know, I look forward to them divorcing, because I think it was a little too stretched, especially in the season where it's like, okay, like, they're clearly soulmates, I guess, Carrie and Brody.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Which is dumb, but you could see that that wasn't gonna happen. I think it's nice. I think it'll be nicer to portray, well, I guess they're not really divorced, because he's like, there won't be a normal divorced family because he'll be running away in Canada. But that would have been more interesting.
Yeah, and I just think that I don't know. So I like that. I liked her role, and it's kind of too bad. I mean, I agree that it was getting kind of annoying, because it was like, obviously the wife's in love with Mike, obviously Brody's in love with Carrie. It's stupid. Just go be with your people.
Yeah.
But, like, I do kind of like that idea of, like, her wrestling with obligation and the obligation of this sort of, like, wifey role that, like, was kind of thrust upon her, but she kind of, you know, wanted a long time ago. I just thought it was kind of cool. And then I kind of like the daughter character as well, Dana. I mean, she's cool. She's cool. She's fine. She goes through a lot of emotional shit, wrestles with a lot of stuff. I don't have much to say about it, but she's cute, you know?
You know, she looks and acts like a 16-year-old, which is pretty impressive of a TV show.
She was a good actor. Yeah, I liked her storylines in season one, but... Yeah.
Even in season two, you know, it was dramatic, like them hitting a person.
Did they die, the person?
Yeah.
My God, really? Okay, I'm going to call it now. Carrie's definitely going to have a Brody baby. She's at one point going to be pregnant. I will put that in my betting pool for Homeland.
Well, you know, hopefully Brody doesn't come back for a long time. Hopefully we don't have, you know, following him in the Canadian forests.
It'd be great if it was set in Canada, am I right?
I've been trying for a while to figure it out, but this episode has to be called Home and Native Land. And I assume that's what season three will be, when it's just Brody, like, hunting moose.
That's a really good pun.
It's so good.
That's well done.
I know.
Give that book back. Return it to Amazon.
Yeah, Mom giving me a book on how to be funny for people that aren't funny. Whatever, bomb. Merry Christmas, Kate. So, I mean, you're going to watch season three, or are you just going to see episode one, and if you're hooked, because she's pregnant now?
No, I'm watching it. I'm carrying it to term. I'm carrying. Carrying it to term.
It's better. I don't know.
It's so much better.
Thank you. I think that I might, but on the other hand, it would take a lot of work for me to get into or to even open the file of Homeland episode. Like, I didn't like to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It wasn't like season one.
I didn't look forward to watching it.
Yeah, season one, I was so excited to watch the next episode, and I stopped watching season two, not on purpose, I just forgot about it, and now I don't care.
Yeah.
Like what we all did with Elementary. That shit.
Oh, yeah, we were going to keep watching that, and then we just...
No,
didn't.
I wasn't.
I was going to keep watching it.
We just did it for the podcast.
Oh, my God, I can't wait until our next podcast when we talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. Yeah. I'm going to have actual opinions, probably.
That's good.
Howard texted me.
It was really good.
I got a text from Manfriend as well during the moment. I assume that you texted me and were like, you're going to love this moment. And he was like, did you see this yet? And I was like, okay, so there's going to be a thing that I'm going to be really excited about.
I assume it's
boys kissing.
It'll be more than one thing.
Okay.
I mean, it's a
But there's
really good
one thing
episode.
That everybody sees
boys
and is
kissing.
Like, Kate.
But I mean, there's two moments of it.
Yeah. It's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
Showing up.
Yeah.
And making love.
No.
Yes.
To a snowman.
No.
Correct. Does Benny show up?
I don't know.
God.
I don't know.
I would pass right out.
Does he?
But Gandalf is in it.
Gandalf's in it. I knew that one. Because I looked up Gandalf on IMDb for some reason. I was just thinking about him the other day.
I recently watched 21 Jump Street.
So did I! No way!
Oh, that's
so random.
Yeah, I watched it on Last Man.
Did you guys watch it together and you're pretending that you didn't watch it together right now because you didn't include me in 21 Jump Street?
No, but we did hang out without you.
Yeah.
It was funny. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed
it's supposed to be pretty good. People
I laughed out loud, actually. Yeah.
Weird that he dates a high schooler, but, whatever.
Remember, that was a plot point in Scott Pilgrim, also. But they
Scott
talked
Pilgrim
about
was dating. Yeah, but they talked about
it.
They put it out there in the open.
Yeah,
as a weird
it's
thing.
It's the first line in the book, I guess.
Anyhow.
What else have we watched lately?
Argo.
Yeah, I guess more Homeland Security stuff.
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about Argo. Argo was good. It was a little too...
suspense-y?
Yeah, just a little too Hollywood suspense near the end.
Well, just the second one, the bus wasn't... Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little bit overdone, but not crazily.
Not crazily. It was just the moment for me when the bus looked like it wasn't going to start. And I was like, really? Like, really? But that said, I went and saw it with someone.
Oh my god, you talk about Canada with it, too.
Oh yeah! Canadians took that credit.
Together.
I liked that movie's like, actually, let's quit. Like, Argo's thesis was Canada took credit for something, and Canada did shit, and now America is back up top.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, Canada doesn't get very much credit in anything.
What are and when we do, we steal it from America.
Yeah,
what did it allegedly get credit for?
For the escape of these hostages, it was a sort of solitary operation through an American agency of some sort, FBI or CIA, I assume.
But the Canadians housed them and helped them fly them back.
Yeah.
Kept them in Canada and did more things, because I don't know things about history, but someone told me that Canada did way more than was portrayed in the movie.
Yeah.
And then still in the movie, they were like, yo, Canadians, they took our credit.
Yeah, at the end they're like, well, no one can ever know we did this. And then so there's like all these news stories, people are like, Canada! Canada!
Oh, man.
I know. And just Ben Affleck, like, as much as Ben Affleck was good in the movie, he definitely had like one facial expression, and it was just like long holes on his like one facial expression.
His like blank face. His blank face is
good. And it was good,
though.
It was good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying it was good.
Also, his stomach looked pretty good in that one shot of it.
I don't remember.
Because I need to, in every podcast, objectify men. And also fracture their bodies.
Catherine Bigelow? She's pretty.
She's pretty good looking.
I hate her.
You're back to hating her? I thought you said she was okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, her ex-husband is a Canadian.
James Cameron?
James Cameron's Canadian, yeah.
Sky, you didn't know that one? Wow! Ottawa, I think.
Yeah, I guess we don't want him to be Canadian.
Traitor.
He makes a lot of money, but he doesn't give it to us.
Yeah. Does he pay his taxes? Do you pay your taxes, Cameron? To Canada?
One of our loyal listeners.
I doubt it. I don't think he lives in Canada.
I would have sincerely doubt he lives in Canada. Some people do, though. Elton John has a house here. His husband's Canadian.
I was like, he's not Canadian. No.
His husband is. He married a Canadian boy. Right.
I think Neil Young has a house here, but Joni Mitchell does not.
Leonard Cohen
does not. Leonard Cohen has in Montreal, yeah.
Rachel McAdams does.
She should be in Canada.
I know. She should be out west somewhere, but she's in California.
Oh, yeah. She's Albertan, isn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, that's double pride for me. Other Albertans. Michael J. Fox. Nickelback. Not a good one. Leslie Nielsen.
Other Ontarians. Justin Bieber.
Avril
Lavigne. Yeah, she's Canadian.
I translated her name for English-speaking listeners.
Are they from Ontario?
Probably.
Oh, yeah, they're from Ajax.
Half of Arcade Fire.
Not where are they from, but where are they from?
We know the reason. Oh my god, Riggins is from BC.
Feist is from Amherst, Nova Scotia.
Riggins is a really good one.
Riggins is.
Yeah, having Taylor Kitsch, I'm pretty proud of. Even though he hasn't proven himself to be a good
action. Ryan Gosling is from Ontario.
Yeah, him and Rachel McAdams are from the same city.
Oh, Rachel McAdams from
Cornwall? I thought she was from Kitchener.
No, son, they were in the same city,
I think.
She
went to York University.
She did.
In the theater department.
Yeah,
we went to York University.
But not the theater department.
But in a different department.
But often there was intermingling between film and theater.
Sure.
We probably would have been like, can you stop rehearsing near our space?
Yeah, you're so loud. We're trying to sleep.
Oh, are you stretching? Do you have to stretch out your acting?
But they would run through the hallways barefoot.
Chanting. Ritualistically.
Who else is Canadian? Because I think this is what the podcast should be about.
I wonder, okay, so is there a way to tie gender into Canadianness? Is there
I have a friend who's doing her whole master's thesis on it, and we're going to have her as a guest on one of our upcoming podcasts.
Sarah Polly podcast.
If you're listening to this, Emma, we'll see you soon.
I think that, I wonder if there's some sort of emotional connection for me between like the underdogness of wanting Canadians to do well and the underdogness of me wanting women to do well.
Mm. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
There's also like Canadian national identity is so broad that you can pretty much tie it to literally anything.
Yeah, it's probably true.
And gender is so broad.
We are going to talk, but I do want to talk more about Canadiana in like a real full thing other than an episode about Canadianism. That goes beyond just listing who
Canadians.
Famous. I mean, yeah, Canadians. But good thing we did it now, so next episode we won't have to.
True.
But I think we will do a Sarah Polly episode because I think Take This Waltz and probably her new documentary is probably the best examples, mainstream examples.
I very much want to see her documentary. It's supposed to be quite good.
Yeah. Sarah Polly is definitely a woman that I root for.
And she's pretty, too.
I super root for her.
Pretty.
She's tiny.
Yeah. Cute.
Little one. Let's talk more about how they look.
Yeah, Kate. What size jeans does she wear?
27.
Me too.
Oh, I used to wear that in high school. Sometimes I still try. Doesn't work anymore, though.
So you're bigger than Sarah Polly. No, we all know
there
that.
There was a time in my life when I was like 17 where I was wearing the same jeans as Sarah Polley.
So. The same pair. It was weird.
It's like magic traveling pants. What is that?
Magic traveling pants! That's the knockoff version by that weird studio that has like transmogrifiers.
The Canadian version.
Magic traveling pants. Is there any Canadian musicals that are any good? I guess we had Score, the hockey musical.
I heard that was not good.
Though. I heard it was also not good. It was obviously shot
all
on
of
Austin.
John Grayson's work.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I sometimes get songs from Zero Patience in my head.
He was nominated for awards. What is it? The Gemini or the Genies?
He won a Genie.
Yeah, he did.
He also won a whole bunch of. He like always was nominated for the Teddy in the Berlin Film Festival. We're now discussing a York University film professor who's also a queer Canadian filmmaker.
But he's a really good filmmaker, so check him out. His name is John Grayson.
His stuff is. We're getting niche here. We needed to have more stuff about Homeland to talk about.
Well, we didn't.
Yeah, we're just filling out this last minute.
We're just talking about. I guess we can wrap it up. I'm sure we have thoughts.
No,
about
wrap it
things.
Up.
I was going to propose for the last minute that we see who can hold their breath the longest, and I realized for the listeners it would just be silent.
It's weird that it took you more than instantly to figure that out.
Yeah.
I don't know. That
and also, why?
You're like, listeners, put your money on Kate.
All right, ready, guys?
And on that.
One, two, three.
Oh, I can't do it. I can't do this.
So visit us.
I win!
Did you have your money on Kara? Tell us at a website of onezone.com where you can tell us who's American, I guess.
No, don't
we
tell
don't
us that.
We don't want to know about that
only
shit.
Surprising Canadians.
Surprising Canadians is actually what our website, our interrogating the Canadian politics of pop culture website is called Surprising Canadians, and we just point them out.
I can't wait till our Canada episode because we can have a Canadian of one's own. A nation of one's own in which to Canada. Canada. What is your
a
joke?
A Canada of one's own in which to... No.
I like that you Sky did, like, a dramatic hand gesture. She's like, guys, I got this. So visit us, no matter your nationality, though, obviously, if it's not Canadian, it's inferior. A website of onezone.com, join the conversation.
Canada's obviously the inferior.
I know, just always. Remember our television?
I can't
brutal.
Wait to deconstruct Canada and like talk about how we think we're so unracist, but really we're super racist.
And also think we're nice, but we're kind of not.
Apparently we're very sarcastic.
Very sarcastic, love that. Because we're, like, how did that become our national identity?
Which is great, though, because I love sarcasm.
I love
Canadian.
That we're nice, but also sarcastic.
Yeah.
Like, how did that work?
People are sort of, like, disarmed by...
Like, we're like, oh, hi, how are you? Can I help you with something? And they're like, sure, you can help me with this. And we're like, yeah, I'll help you with that. It's just like a back
what kind
of secondary
your
comment.
Impression of sarcasm was really weird.
I'm not very good at humor as a Canadian.
I have a book for you. See you next week, friends.
Proserpina,
Proserpina, come home to mama. Come home to mama, Proserpina, Proserpina.